Berkeley, California, the autumn of 2009. A graduate student named Matei Zaharia is sitting in Soda Hall, the computer science building on the north side of the UC Berkeley campus, watching his lab mates suffer. They are members of a research group called the AMP Lab, which stand for Algorithms, Machines, and People, and they're doing what was, at the time, the dominant form of large-scale data analysis. They are running a tool called Hadoop MapReduce. MapReduce is, in 2009, the gold standard for processing very large data sets across a cluster of cheap computers, and a lab is using it to train machine learning models on data that, by the standards of the day, is enormous. A few terabytes, sometimes more. The problem the lab keeps hitting, the problem Zaharia keeps hearing his friends complain about over coffee at the cafe on the ground floor, is that machine learning algorithms have a particular shape. They need to read the same data set over and over, dozens of times, refining the model with each pass. MapReduce is not built for this. MapReduce assumes you read your data once, do one transformation, write the result to disk, and then maybe read it back for the next transformation, writing again. Each pass through the data, the entire cluster grinds its hard drives, slowly, deliberately, because the disks of 2009 are slow. A model that, in principle, ought to train in 10 minutes takes 10 hours, because almost all of those hours are spent moving data on and off spinning platters. Zaharia thinks about this for several weeks. He is in his second year of graduate school, advised by a small group of senior faculty, one of whom is named Ion Stoica. He sketches a different approach. He writes, in August of 2009, the first lines of a new tool. The idea is simple in description and revolutionary in effect. Keep the data in memory between passes. Do not write it back to disk. If a machine in the cluster dies, recompute the lost piece from the operations that produced it instead of by copying replicas around. Make the whole thing easy enough to use that a researcher can express the same logic in 5 lines that previously took 50. He calls his project Spark. On the 3rd of October, 2010, he uploads it to a then-young website called GitHub. The README, in the earliest commits, is a few paragraphs long. The world will, in time, notice. This is Rust, gently. A patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 29, The Berkeley Giant. Today I want to take you through the story of Apache Spark, the most important piece of analytical data software of the last 15 years, and the reason most of the world's corporate data work in 2026 runs at some layer on the fake chip we talked about last episode. By the end, I want you to understand what Spark is, why it won, what an institution called Databricks did with it, and where it sits today so that the next 3 episodes on Spark's costs and on the Rust alternative being built to replace it will land on solid ground. Let me back up to the part about Hadoop, because the story does not make sense without it. In the early 2000s, the technology world had a new problem. Companies like Google and Yahoo were suddenly working with datasets that did not fit on a single computer. A single web crawl, the index of every page Google had ever seen, was larger than any disk you could buy. The old approach, which was to put your data in a database on one expensive server, did not work because there were no servers large enough. Google's engineers, around 2004, published 2 papers that changed the industry. One described a file system that spread data across hundreds of cheap machines. The other described a programming model called MapReduce, in which you wrote 2 small functions, one called map and one called reduce, and a framework took care of running them across the cluster. A team at Yahoo, working in the open, built a free version of those ideas. They called it Hadoop, named after a stuffed elephant belonging to the lead engineer's son. Hadoop, which I will pronounce Hadoop, became the foundation of the entire big data movement of the late 2000s. Every large company built data infrastructure around it. Every database vendor wrote a connector. Books and conferences and certification programs were created. For about 5 years, Hadoop was the answer to the question of how to work with data at scale. But Hadoop's MapReduce was painful to use. A simple analysis that, in plain language, says read the sales data, filter to last quarter, group by customer, average the spend, became 50 or 100 lines of carefully orchestrated Java code, with intermediate results written to disk between every step because that was what MapReduce assumed. For iterative work, the model fell apart. For exploratory work, where a data scientist wanted to try one thing, look at the result, try another, the lag was unbearable. Zaharias Bett, sketched in Soda Hall in that autumn of 2009, was that you could build something dramatically better on top of the same cluster without throwing away the underlying file system. You just had to be willing to keep data in memory and to express the work at a higher level than two raw functions called map and reduce. The breakthrough idea, formalized in a paper published in 2012, was called the Resilient Distributed Dataset, the RDD. The RDD was, in spirit, a very clever trick. Instead of representing your data as a giant table sitting in memory, Spark represented your data as a description of the operations that had produced it. You said, read this file, then filter to last quarter, then group by customer. Spark did not immediately do those things. It wrote them down as a kind of recipe. When you finally asked for an answer, Spark figured out the most efficient way to execute the recipe, sent the pieces to the right machines, ran them in parallel, and assembled the result. If one machine in the cluster died halfway through, Spark looked at its written-down recipe, found the steps that had been lost, and reran them on a different machine. No data had to be copied three times for safety. The recipe was the safety. The 2012 paper, called Resilient Distributed Datasets, won the Best Paper Award at a major systems conference called NSDI. In 2013, Zaharia and six of his Berkeley colleagues, among them Ion Stoika, Ali Godsi, and Reynold Exent, founded a company called Databricks, which I will pronounce Databricks, to commercialize the project. That same June, they donated Spark to the Apache Software Foundation, where it entered the incubator with more than 120 contributors from 25 organizations already involved. On the 27th of February, 2014, the foundation announced that Apache Spark had graduated to top-level project status alongside Hadoop itself. What followed was the most dominant decade any data tool has ever had. In 2015, Spark shipped something called the Data Frames API. A data frame is a table-shaped object, the same idea as a spreadsheet with rows and columns. The team noticed that almost everybody who did data work in any language was thinking in tables. They built an API around that mental model. A data scientist who knew the popular Python library called Pandas could write Spark code that looked exactly like Pandas code, except it ran on a cluster of 100 machines instead of one laptop. Spark went from being a tool for systems experts to being a tool for anyone who had ever opened Excel. Around the data frames came a stack of higher-level libraries. Spark SQL, which let you write ordinary SQL queries and have Spark execute them. MLib, a machine learning library, with implementations of regression and clustering and recommendation. Structured streaming, which let you write the same data frame code against a never-ending stream of incoming events instead of a static table. And a Python binding called PySpark, which I will pronounce PySpark, that became the way most working data scientists actually use the tool because Python was the language they already spoke. By 2017, Spark was running in production at every bank you have heard of, every cloud-scale technology company, most of the Fortune 500. Uber's data pipelines ran on Spark. Apple, Airbnb, Netflix, all on Spark. The library called PySpark became, for a generation of data scientists, the way you worked with data that did not fit on your laptop. The institution behind it grew with the tool. Databricks, the company Zaharia and his co-founder started, became something almost unprecedented in the data world. As of February of 2026, Databricks is valued at $134 billion after its Series L round, with a publicly disclosed $5.4 billion revenue run rate, growing more than 65% year over year. The chief executive, Ali Ghodsi, has hinted at a public listing later in 2026. Databricks is, by valuation, the fourth most valuable private company in the world, behind only ByteDance, SpaceX, and OpenAI. Zaharia himself, the graduate student in Soda Hall, won the 2026 ACM Prize in Computing, $250,000 for his work, which he announced he was donating to charity. I want to say a word about why Spark won. The answer is not glamorous. It won for two reasons, both architectural. The first is that it was dramatically easier to use than MapReduce. A 50-line MapReduce program became a 5-line Spark program. The mental overhead for an analyst or a data scientist fell off a cliff. The second is that it kept data in memory between operations. For iterative work, particularly machine learning, that was a 10 to 100 times speed up. The whole industry, faced with a tool that was both easier and faster, did the obvious thing. They switched. There's one more architectural beat that matters, because the rest of this season hinges on it. In July of 2022, the Databricks team proposed an architectural change called Spark Connect. The idea was to split Spark into two pieces. A thin client, which lived inside the user's notebook or application, and a remote server, which did the actual heavy computation, with the two pieces talking over a network protocol called gRPC, with the data frame operations themselves encoded as protocol buffers. Spark Connect shipped in Apache Spark version 3.4 in April of 2023, became production ready in 3.5, and is the default in 4.0, released in May of 2025. The reason this matters is that once Spark had been split into a client and a server, anybody could write a new server that spoke the same protocol. The client did not care which server it was talking to. As long as the new server understood the protocol, it could pretend to be Spark. This is the door through which the rest of this season's story walks. Spark, in the meantime, is enormous. Almost every dollar of corporate analytical work that flows through Databricks, which is to say a large fraction of the world's analytical work, runs on AJVM in Scala, on top of the same fake ship we described last episode. The gifts of Spark, the easy distributed computing, the unified data frame API, the integration with every storage system on Earth, were built on the costs of the JVM. Those costs are the subject of next episode. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that Spark was a graduate student's idea, born in a Berkeley lab in the autumn of 2009, written in a Java family language called Scala, designed to make distributed analytical work both easier and faster than the previous standard. The second is that Spark won completely over the last 15 years, and the company built around it, Databricks, is one of the most valuable private companies in the world. The third is that Spark Connect, the protocol that splits Spark into a thin client and a remote server, opened a door through which other engines, written in other languages, can now walk. Next time on Rust, gently, we get honest about what running Spark actually costs. The JVM tax. Garbage collection pauses that swallow a third of the wall clock. Memory overhead that triples the bill. The serialization border between Python and Scala that turns small data jobs into surprisingly expensive ones. The cluster bills that arrive at the end of the month and force a conversation no engineer enjoys having. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.